I would like just to repeat that basically the introduction to the second talk, that I'm very thankful to organizers for inviting me, because my talk doesn't have a Planck constant. You can put it to zero. DNA may fall apart, but that's not important for the theory itself. And of course, I'm really interested in collaborating with other theoreticians on this topic, if they, theoreticians, find this interesting. Evolution, so we've already been told that very important element in a cell is DNA, which stores genetic information. Evolution is a science which studies how this object, DNA, evolves in time on different time scales, from days to billions of years. And there is a whole bunch of problems which are studied in evolutionary science. One of the most typical is restoration of ancestral trees, which is also called, actually, technical term is phylogenetic analysis. Basically, you have a sample of organisms, and then you have, based on their DNA sequence, you have to restore who originate from whom and when they split back in time. And here, this applies, this can be used both for viruses and for organisms on very long evolutionary scales. For example, you can restore the phylogenetic trees of primates. I personally find this particular part of activity is not very interesting for a theoretician, especially when I found where, in my opinion of, in the opinion of my experimental colleagues, I'm on this tree. As far as the, that's one thing. Another thing is, of course, genetics, but genetics studies evolution as a static process, and it connects the different genes to different proteins, as described in the second talk. And that's not exactly evolution, although there are strong, of course, interactions between the two fields. And the most interesting part here is to predicting a time dependence of the frequency of different genetic variants as they evolve in a population of organisms. This theory, which is called population biology, is purely mathematical, developed from 1920s, and it has multiple and very important applications. For example, viruses submitted to replication inhibitors in HIV-infected patients evolved pretty fast and escaped drug resistance, which until recently was the main problem for the failure of drug treatment. Then, of course, if you take, for example, influenza, because of recombination and mixture of different variants within their host animals, which are chicken and ducks, you have all kinds of scary strains. I was just told that one of us recently went to Japan and he was infected with such strains, so he had a high fever for a long time. And there is a virus escape from the immune response, because immune response recognizes particular genetic motifs. And this is only the reason why I mentioned the examples connected to the viruses, because I actually work in retrovirology lab. but of course, the applications, this the other application is global evolution on very huge timescales as well. So for example, suppose we have a population of sequences or genomes, which are the same word as DNA, and each of them at certain part has a mutations. It just exists initially, has a mutation, which makes it replication less advantageous than it could be. Then it, as time goes, you will, one of the sequences will develop at advantageous mutations, which is shown here by the absence of the cross, and which will grow in population and finally take over almost entire population. This is a very important problem, which is called fixation of advantageous mutation, and applies to all the examples which I have listed. Now, it's very interesting to calculate, to predict actually, how the frequency of this, which is proportion of deleterious variant in this population, depends on time. In order to make such a prediction, you need a specific model. And the biggest problem about this is actually this process is random. And you need to work out stochastic theory. Now, before I progress further, I'm going to list briefly a special term which I'm forced to use terms and notation which I have to use during my talk. I will use N for population size, which is the number of DNA in a population. The word nucleotide everyone knows. Mutation is when DNA replicates, there are random errors, and the rate per site is denoted per site per generation, per replication cycle is denoted nu. The term selection refers to the fact that particular genetic variant can have advantage in its replication rate or survival. And I will use the word selection coefficient, which characterizes the relative difference in the progeny left by for example, organism during one generation. The term random drift refers to stochastic changes in genetic composition caused by the fact that the number of organisms is finite and we have a Poisson fluctuations. The word frequency is a proportion. Linkage is the fact that different evolving nucleotides are located at the same polymer chain. Locus, it was a term for nucleotide before nucleotides and DNA was discovered. And mutant is, I'm going to use in this talk the word mutant for less fit or deleterious variant of nucleotide, and the word wild type for the best fit variant. The simplest model which we started from considered a viral population with a fixed number of infected cells, which are denoted here by circles. Black circles denote deleterious variants, mutants, and white advantageous or wild type. Now, if population is small, selection is actually not, yes, and every cell produces a fixed number of variants, which are rhombi here, and a small proportion of this variance, in this example one-third, is chosen randomly to infect next generation of cells. Because of the Poisson fluctuations of the chosen variants are virus particles, the genetic composition at each next stage slightly differ from the previous one. And it turns out that in small population and at moderate selection, this is the dominating mechanism of the change in genetic composition. Into the same model, you can add mutations by simply assuming that while infecting another generation of cell, a virus particle can mutate to the opposite variant, change its color. And selection. In order to include selection, you just assume that each cell produces slightly different number of progeny virus particles. In this case, it's a ratio of 3:2. However, I will consider small differences. The formalism which describes the system, the initial formalism, is based on Markov chain equation, which expresses probability p small at time t plus 1 to have n mutants in the populations through the probability to have n prime mutants at the previous generation t. The time is a generation number and is discrete. And the p n n prime is the kernel of this transformation, which can be expressed by those two formulas, which are kind of not too long and not too short. And the formulas contain S, which is a selection coefficient, relative difference in the progeny per cell per generation. A is normalization factor. Pi is a Poisson statistics. And there is somewhere mutation rate. Yep, it enters the Poisson statistics. And of course, population size stands right there. And here, so we have three parameters. It turns out that if selection coefficient and mutation rate, which is the case for real system, is very small, then you can, then the changes are rather smooth both in time and also the probability p small depends very smoothly on n. So you can replace it actually by a continuous function on f, which is a frequency of the variant in population, and time, which is also a continuous variable. And in that case, we have something much more pleasant looking. That the first, the equation. In the left-hand side, you have a partial derivative in time. In the right-hand side, you have second and first derivatives in the frequency of mutants in the populations. The first term, inversely proportional to population size, describes diffusion, which they call random drift, in space F. in, along the axis F. Second term describes directed drift towards F equals zero, which corresponds to selection. And the third term describes also directed drift towards F equals 1/2, which is the case of symmetric back and forward mutations. Now, this equation has lots of large and small parameters. N is large, mu is much smaller than S, much smaller than 1. Therefore, you obviously can solve it in all important analytic cases for any arbitrary initial conditions. We did exactly that, and actually all these results are known in population biology. We basically wanted to write a review directed at both physicists interested in population biology and experimental biologists who cannot read formulas but are interested in evolution. And so I will just show one example of the problem. The simplest example is a steady state. Suppose we wait for a long time, and then a system arrives at a state when it no longer changes its statistical property. Of course, the frequency will fluctuate in time, but its probability will not. It will just become constant. If population size is much smaller than 1 over selection coefficient, selection is not important, and random drifts and mutations dominate. Now, the shape of the of probability density depends solely on the parameter mu times n. At large mu n, the probability density is a Gaussian. Yes, of course, it's Gaussian, except at the wings. And it's located at 1/2. You have approximately equal mixture. The larger population size, the narrower is the standard deviation. As n goes down, it widens out, flattens out, and finally, at small mu n, it becomes U-shaped, which means that the most probable state of population is purely genetically uniform, either in wild type or either in wild type or in mutant. And there is a small probability to find it in between, in mixed state, and this probability and the typical value will be spread all over the interval. The situation changes if you increase population size, but still keep it below the inverse mutation rate, which is a rather large parameter. And in that case, probability density becomes asymmetric. It kills basically the right-hand side of the entire graph. It still has a peak at zero, but it has also exponential tail decaying at certain characteristic value of frequency. So that again, we always are in monomorphous sites, except rarely, and in that case, we can predict only characteristic value of the frequency. After solving these problems for arbitrary initial conditions and studying not only steady state but also dynamics of the probability density, we found out that all the variety of the problem can be shown at such a simple diagram, which shows the dominant factor of evolution and overall behavior of evolution versus two parameters, which is intra-population genetic distance, which is simply the average number of differences between two sequences sampled from population, and the effective population size n, the number of sequences. And it turns out that at small n, smaller than 1 over s, the selection can be neglected, and we do have practically a neutral case when we have. The same applies in the intermediate interval between 1 over s and 1 over mu, provided the diversity of population is small. So it's you have less than 100 cells of minority allele for the examples which I showed here, s equals 1%. However, if diversity is large, in that case, selection dominates and you have deterministic evolution with some sort of correction. So basically, if you have deleterious mutation here, it's going to go away from population in almost deterministic fashion. If you start from weakly diverse population, you will have accumulation of mutations. And only at population size is much larger than 1 over mutation rate, which for RNA viruses is somewhere around this number of infected cells, you have a deterministic regime as a good first approximation. Now, unfortunately, this model didn't consider many important factors of evolution, but the most basic, the most omnipresent factor of evolution, which so far escaped a quantitative treatment, leaving alone analytic treatment, in a broad range of parameters, was the factor of linkage, the fact that you actually have different nucleotides linked together in one polymer chain. And they evolve together. The evolution of separate sites is not independent, because if you have selection at one site, others, and for example, the entire sequence is selected out. And they all contribute to fitness, and the entire sequence will be lost. Now, the model which we consider studies an arbitrary large number of linked nucleotides, which are evolving and which are grouped together according to the number of mutations on them. We don't care how mutations are distributed, we just count the total numbers. For example, four mutations, all sequences are four sequences. Three sequences with five mutations, two sequences with three mutations. The processes which one have to account here is forward mutations shown by thick blue arrows and back mutations at the sites and at the sites which are which already shown as dots shown by thin black thin blue arrows. The sequences which are to the right hand side from the average sequence are selected against, because they have too many mutations, and the sequences which are on the left hand side are selected for, because they have less mutations than an average. And that's exactly what I call a haplotype space. It's very trivial haplotype space in this model, but it suffices for description of what we need to predict. And I must Right, the first our part of the work was to use a simple-minded Monte Carlo simulation. What we did, we simply introduced individual sequences in computer and numbered them and followed their fate and the fate of their progeny. And we also monitored the number of mutations per each sequence. The way we did it is that at each step, we have created a system of N boxes, one box for first sequence, second sequence, third, and sequence. And we threw out N random points, like raindrops, which distributed randomly between those boxes. For example, this sequence has one progeny. This sequence has two progenies. The third sequence has no progeny, and so on and so forth. That's we take care about random drift. In order to take care about selection, we made boxes slightly different. The formula connecting the number of sequences, a number of mutations in a given sequence, K2, for example, is zero, to the size of the box is based on the assumption that different nucleotides do not interact on biological level, only because they are linked together, they do interact, but not because the RNA, due to RNA or protein foldings, they touch each other. It's the simplest model. It didn't include such interaction. It's called epistasis. So epistasis was not here. And finally, we added mutations into the system. Just deleterious mutations occur, and advantageous mutations occur at a rate proportional to the number of sites which didn't mutate yet or already had mutated. And when you take, for example, 10 sequences and put it through the computer, 2,000 loci for some typical parameters of selection coefficient and mutation rate, you obtain an interesting effect. Here is y-axis is the number of mutations in a sequence, and I show each individual sequence by a separate little dot. And this is generation number, which is the time, the system. As you can see, the distribution of all dots is rather compact. They stay all close together. It's very important. And the second observation, we can see that staying close together, they all shift in time almost linearly, plus minus some small fluctuations. What does it mean? It means that the system continuously accumulates mutations despite of the fact that we have selection in the system. This effect was predicted in 1964, and it's called on semi-quantitative level, it was called Miller's redshift in 1972. If this model would be correct, it would mean that all of us, not only viruses and other pathogens which infect us, are accumulating mutations with time and slowly degrading from a person to person and inside of a person. We will discuss a little bit later what can limit this effect. Unfortunately, Monte Carlo simulation has obvious drawbacks, and it really doesn't work at large population sizes, and besides, I wanted analytic solutions. So as a result, I used two observations. First observation, in order to develop such more general approach than Monte Carlo simulation, the first observation was that the mutation rate per the part of genome under study for those sites which have small selection coefficient S is actually much less than 1. The fact that mutation rate is per base mu is much less than 1 is trivial, but the fact that small number times large number L is small is not. And I here list two examples for two different viruses, human immunodeficiency and vesicular stomatitis virus. Those are data which I have used. Therefore, per each generation, you can have only 0 or 1 random mutations per sequence per generation. 2 is already a rare effect. That's number one. The second, since the population size is large, much larger than 1, and you have many sequences per each slot with a fixed number of mutants per sequence. For example, if this is a mutation number, the number of the frequency of sequences with that particular number of mutation is much larger than 1 over n, which means that the copy number is much larger than 1. Because of this, inside of this distribution curve, you can apply deterministic approach and forget about random effects. Only mutation selections are important. However, at the edges of this distribution, when it falls down to values on order of 1 over n, one or two copies per entire population, of course, you have random drift and sequences are lost. Therefore, I call this approach semi-deterministic. And the first step to describe it is to write down purely deterministic equation, which has nothing to do with what I showed you for the theory of a single locus in the very beginning, and which says that the change, discrete change in a per one generation in the frequency is expressed as a sum of terms, which is all of which are proportional to mutation rate per genome, and which describe forward mutations, hence we have F chi minus 1 t, process k minus 1 error k, which describes loss of sequences back and forth from the slot k, here it is, and we describe selection. It enters as a ratio of selection coefficient to mutation rate per genome and depends on the average of k minus k average, because competition between sequences occur only within the sequences which exist. So sequences are compared to the average sequence. And this is back mutations from k plus 1 to k, that's all. And the second step was assumed that whenever frequency falls below 1 over n, which corresponds to one sequence per entire population, I'm going to set it to be 0. It seems to be a very crude way to describe random effects, because why I set it at one sequence and not at 2 or 3? But actually, it turns out the population size enters all results only as argument of a large logarithm, so that if you add a coefficient inside a logarithm, it's really not important. So the results are of two kinds. If I solve this equation numerically, I obtain two types of behavior. Suppose we start from a population which all have 80 mutations, for example. At one choice of parameters, it will spread out, form a stable in shape bell curve, which will move to the left in this, as I call it, haplotype space, in mutation number, until it hits 0. And 0 corresponds to the best fit sequence. It doesn't hit 0 exactly, but it stays localized close. Now, there is an effect which is called error catastrophe, and which consists of delocalization of the final curve, but it occurs at much larger of mutation value of mutation rate, which is not important for those data. So the average falls almost linearly. It decreases until it slows down, and the standard deviation stays constant, as is the shape. At other sizes of parameter, at other set of parameter, namely smaller population size and larger number of loci, on the contrast, the bell curve moves to the right. Average k is increasing. Standard deviation, however, is again constant. Now, there is a particular case when analytic solution is possible. It is the case when selection coefficient, which is small, is smaller than mutation rate per genome, mu L, which is also small. Otherwise, you have to, if this is not the case, there is only numeric solution. But if this is true, the frequency distribution in k is a broad solitary wave, which means that the width includes many different values of k. And in that case, I can work again with continuous functions in k and time. And here are two examples, show both analytic and numeric results obtained for this regime. Magenta curve showed analytic results. In a second I will tell how I obtained it. And the circles show numeric calculations at the same set of parameters. As analytic calculation predicts the mutation rate, enters only this scale in the y-axis, which shows accumulation rate, the speed of this solitary wave, expressed in terms of mutation rate per genome. So, however, the shape of this curve, whether it's population size, does not depend on mutation rate. That's what predicts analytic solution, and numeric more or less agrees with that. However, what it depends on is the selection coefficient to mu L ratio. It's quite sensitive. The value of population, the range of population size parameters in which the accumulation of mutations occur is exponentially large in parameter mu L over S, as you can see from this example. Now, how I obtain this result is, of course, the obvious thing would be to take a difference between k, k minus 1, and expand it in a Taylor series like this. By the way, I have to apologize, the logarithm has to be absent here. There is no logarithm in the first line, just df over dk. So first derivative, second derivative, and so on. However, it turns out this is not correct, because at the ages of distribution, continuity in k for f breaks down. What is preserved is continuity in k for logarithm f, and that enables me to use simple approximation for logarithm. That's the solution of the equation which follows, of continuous equation, represents a moving wave. It depends on k minus vt only. V is the speed of the soliton, which may be either positive accumulation or negative reversion of deleterious mutation. And using this fact, I obtained result, the relation between population size, number of mutations at given moment of time per sequence, and the speed of the soliton V, expressed in terms of parameter mu L, as I showed in the previous plot. So you can see sigma here is the ratio S over mu L. Alpha here is the proportion of sites which are already mutated. And U is parameter which is expressed in terms of alpha and V. Now, the formula is kind of long. I have to show its graphic presentation. And it looks as follows. Suppose that, first of all, that the numbers here show different values of k over L, of the mutant site frequency. And suppose first that this mutant site frequency is zero. We have very few mutations per sequence. In that case, accumulation rate stays almost positive, which means mutations do accumulate, don't dissipate, and shows the shape and obtains some shape, monotonous decay expressed as a function of S over mu L times logarithm population size. At some critical value of population size, Miller-Rachet stops. There is no accumulation. The value exponentially depends on S over mu L, of mu L over S. If, however, now you introduce a finite mutation, mutant frequency into the problem, then this region when Miller-Rachet exists shrinks. It becomes it disappears, the Miller-Rachet stops at smaller population size. As you can see, it shrinks more and more and more and more. And the negative value corresponds to dissipation of mutations. So that gives more or less the entire phase diagram. This is another presentation when I fix the speed of soliton and plot the fraction of mutant sites versus the log population size. The green curve here corresponds to zero speed. It means that there exists steady state, and it specifically says how many mutant size we have per sequence at a given population size, so that we have a steady solution. When I combine these results with the results from Monte Carlo simulations, I obtained the diagram for dominant factors and overall direction of evolution is as follows. We have four essentially different intervals in population size, all of them exponentially large, except. So for the smallest population size, Muller ratchet exists, and you have a drift. However, unlike in one locus theory, both selection and linkage are critically important for determining the speed of this drift, as we just saw from previous slides. So at smallest population size, you always have neutral evolution, and selection is not important. And the second interval, you do have Muller-Rechet, but only at small mutant site frequencies, and selection is critically important for determining the rate of this process. And the third interval, you don't have Muller-Rechet, you only have reversion. Mutants dissipate in population. And however, the rate at which this occurs turned out to be much slower than the case of one locus theory. So reversion of is the same thing as fixation of advantageous mutation. In other words, the rate, overall rate of evolution is much slower than in the case when you would have separate evolving sites. And this is a critical fact because, and only at extremely large population sizes, which for representative parameters for RNA viruses is 10 power 1,000 organisms, obviously it never happens in reality, you can neglect with linkage and sites become completely independent. This because this value is proportional to the number of losses. Now, the fact that reversion is so much delayed has incredible importance for understanding the use of sex. Sex is recombination, and recombination splits sites, makes them independent. It occurs between two different sites and makes them evolve independently, and it accelerates the process of fixation of process of reversion of deleterious mutation, which is fixation of new advantageous mutations to the same words. For example, I show example which I fit to reversion inside of typical infected patient who was not submitted to drug therapy inside of HIV gene, which is called protease gene. And this shows the time of 50% reversion starting from 80 mutations, which is the thing which I found from independent data. And the red curve shows numeric result as compared to one locus theory. As you can see, this reversion is delayed several times. The green result is analytic result. It turns out that when the mutant frequency is not very small, then analytic approximation kind of not as accurate as in the case of the Muller-Rechet. And the only value S is the fitting parameter here. Everything else is found from independent data. And do I have 2 minutes? 1 minute? Okay. Okay, in the end, I would like to show a much more interesting example which allows to verify model to an extent. And this is experiments on passage of another virus in vitro from one plate to another many times. It turns out that if you take the number of virus, the amount of virus which is passaged is huge, then the fitness, which is of the virus with respect to some reference variant, which is assumed to be one, the relative fitness, is increasing in time as shown by black dots. And finally, it's kind of saturates and plus minus fluctuations. And here I show the number of passages. We managed to fit this data using three fitting parameters, which is not a big treat, as you can understand, but nevertheless, three fitting parameters for the number of initial number of mutations per sequence here, as compared to that, for selection coefficient, and for another parameter which is connected to epistasis, and I don't want to discuss here because I'm out of time. But that's not interesting. Interesting that without using any additional fitting parameter, we were able to explain experiments, the dependence between the fitness, initial fitness, which does not change in the population, because if fitness is small, it tends to increase. If fitness is large, experiment says it tends to decrease. So there is a critical fitness which stays constant. And it depends on the number of infectious units as shown by four circles here. We have basically a logarithmic dependence on the relative of this critical fitness with respect to population size. So not using a single fitting parameter, we explain this curve, and our result is shown by green curve. This is numeric semi-deterministic approach, and this region is Monte Carlo simulation. The green curve is obtained by two methods. Analytic approach in this particular case is not accurate. And I would like to thank John Wakely and John Coffin, my collaborators, and Isabel Novella, who the author of this data on vesicular stomatitis virus, and Joe Felsenstein, who knows everything about population biology, which is worth to know. Thank you.
N is a measure for the kind of complexity of the species. Species that has more information is more complex. What is N?
N is a population size.
Population in what sense? Number of individuals or number of?
Number of genomes in population.
Number of genomes. So it's the diversity. What is really N?
No, it's just number of individuals. For example, here we have population size about 100 or 50.
Just measure the number of...
Yeah.
So when N increases, does it make it better or worse for the selection?
If N increases, it makes it better, because at large N, selection is a dominant mechanism. I'll show this respective slides again. So I will have go screen... go by title, and I think it was slide number 3, or actually 4. Next. Computer is slow, already pressed it. Yes. So the one locus theory is easy to explain. If a population size is small, then selection is not important at all. Whether you have bad mutations or small, it doesn't matter, and you have just drift. If its population size is very large, according to one locus theory, you have nearly deterministic regime, and selection is dominant factor, so that if some good variant appears, it will be fixed by selection really fast. It will be exponentially amplified in the population. And there is intermediate regime of population sizes, which we call selection drift regime, which whether selection dominates or random drift dominates depends on the diversity of population. The measure of diversity of population is the average number of nucleotide difference per sequence. You take two sequences, count, they are different here, divide by the total number.
So just this makes large N good, unlike competition for food and things like that. Yeah, so I mean, you know.
So competition for food is described in S. And or somebody lives longer, it's described in S. Anything, any sort of difference which is connected to genetic differences is described in S. It's all lumped together in one parameter. And this factor becomes important legend. Well, the tests, the second part of the talk is not published yet, so, and we're discussing tests, but the idea, the simplest test, let's go again to the end, is simply, as you noticed, on the last slide, or one of the last slides, I believe it was 24, you have only 4 experimental points. Oh, excuse me, it was extra slide. You had only 4 experimental points, and we predict specific shape of the curve, which goes more or less to these points, but without a single parameter, but it's still not convincing. We need more points. So we need repetition of the same experiment with a multiple passage with a fixed fitness. And I was thinking just about suggesting to my boss, who has a huge center at NIH, that's not where I work, and to prepare a library of different variants of HIV who have different fitness, and to repeat this data, just to begin with. Also to determine the best fit variant, to determine the wild type, see whether it corresponds to the listed in that database's consensus. And measure, most important, to measure recombination separately. Because here, by fitting, we extract that HIV is three times spliced by recombination efficiently, but it can be measured separately. Now, how do they measure fitness? They mix. It's one of these experiments which is explained by which you can explain by one locus theory, because you have just two variants. You mix two variants in 50-50 proportion. And does everyone see them? Or does anyone see it? Or okay. So you have two variants which you mix in 50-50% proportion. One virus, one another virus, and then you watch with time in a plate, and then you watch with time whether it goes down, the mixture goes up. And in log scale, in y-axis, the slope of this curve determines the relative fitness of one variant to another. That's standard. Yes, please. That's correct. That's exactly what the excellent straight line, as a matter of fact. That's exactly what they did in the beginning. How unfortunately, I would like to point out that we have four points, which are not equidistant, and even without knowing details, intrinsic details of statistics, one can see that whether these points are really lie on this line or not, it doesn't really matter. So you have basically three points to go one line. The relative position of those points is not statistically significant, because you have a huge fluctuation between different experiments, and they had only six experiments. Our results was obtained by averaging over 200 experiments in Monte Carlo. It's easier to do than real experiments. Therefore, we have three points with the straight lines through them. Unfortunately, there is no theory which produces straight line. Which would be consistent. You can write a formula, which could be derived from the first principles model. So therefore, what's the meaning of it?
Thanks everyone.